Wake up, gamers, because you're listening to Big Think Dimension with KZ Excellent.
I'm optimistic about things.
Dan and Bob Video Games.
You see that mountain? You can fuck another man on that mountain.
And Mr. Feel.
Lords of Shadow is a bad game.
Here on Gigaboots.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good there, partner.
What?
Yeehaw! I'm Bob Video Games, and I like playing Devil May Cry and being wrong about Mod Nation Racers.
Bob, I would like to know that we hit the record button, and I worry these two other people may put out there how you actually sound. You may want to change to your, you know, on stage, on screen voice.
Well, gee there, my throat's feeling a little scratchy, so I think I'm just gonna go ahead and do a really, really racist impression of Dr. Agro instead.
Okay, that's probably better than showing them how you actually sound with your southern twang.
My name's Dr. Agro, and I like anime that isn't very good.
That's a stunning impersonation. Damn, you sound exactly like him.
Yeah. He's like, hey, you want my takes on Outlaw Star?
I will fucking gut you like a fish.
Wow, that is the best Aggro impersonation I've ever heard.
It has to be Aggro. He threatened my life. That happens in almost every piece of content we're in.
You may be right. Man, it's been a hell of a week. I'm not sure about in video games, but it's been a hell of a week. Bob became Dr. Agro. I got a laptop that said it could do HDR, but if you turn it on, it shits its pants.
Oh, no.
Which is fine. I didn't need that feature. Like, I didn't need it. I'm not losing.
I didn't need the feature I was promised.
Yeah, see, and that's the problem, right? Like, and just so I can describe to people exactly what's happening with this thing, I got the choice between two different screens in this laptop, and somehow it worked out that the cheaper one was the 4K OLED. Somehow! So we got a 4K OLED screen, and one of the advertised features of the 4K OLED version is it can do HDR, which is, you know, that feature that's in all the fancy new shit. And I was like, sure, you know, these screens, as they ship out from the manufacturer, are apparently, like, color corrected and calibrated at the factory, so that way they are good enough to fucking color grade on. They're that accurate. And I was like, I would love to have that, because our TVs aren't calibrated. We never calibrated them. You have to buy equipment to do that, and they don't do it at the manufacturer for the TVs. And I was like, yeah, sure, I would love to be able to look at a YouTube video in HDR and be like, that's how this looks, and I can be confident in that. So I turn on the HDR, I go to YouTube, it can't even play a 1080p video without shitting its pants. It just starts dropping frames like crazy. So that feature maybe tragic. Shouldn't be advertised.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's like making a mod for a console and saying you have 100% compatibility on games and you don't.
Yes, it's a lot like selling, say, the PlayStation I.O. or PSIO or SIO, as they insist we call it, but I am not okay with, and saying it has 100% compatibility when it doesn't work with music with a single Tony Hawk game. The entire fucking franchise does not
100%
work.
100% compatibility. Here's one of the most popular PlayStation games.
I mean, fucking seriously, Tony Hawk 2 sold so many fucking copies. Like, what was it, 15 mil? I don't know. It sold a ludicrous amount of copies. But that's right, guys. We're talking about Tony Hawk, and it's October, so of course it's Tony Hawktober. So we've been streaming
some
Tony Hawk.
The thing you described and joked about, I was like, I don't know if it's real.
Yeah,
like,
no.
He's told me the plans for it, and I still don't know if it's real.
That's the way I like to keep things that are maybe a bit less put together than some of our themed events. Tony Hawktober, we're just going to be streaming some Tony Hawk. We're not going to be doing, like, giant compendium version
750 videos and dying.
Yeah, we're not going to be doing that. It's just going to be a few live streams, hopefully doing most of the series. So That's right, everyone. We're going to stream Tony Hawk 1, Tony Hawk 2, Tony Hawk 3, Tony Hawk 4, and the final game of the series, Tony Hawk 5.
I thought this joke sucked when you said it on stream, and it sucked now.
My face is curling up like a pork rind.
Oh, that's why. You guys are upset we're not getting Tony Hawk Pro Skater HD in there with the Revert DLC. Yes.
Robomoto.
They make the best ones. Yeah, no, that's
I own that. I own that. We do multiplayer or the server's dead.
The servers are dead.
They have to be dead. The servers are dead. Way Activision would Activision wouldn't keep up something they're not making money on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's kind of depressing. Weirdly enough,
add the mode where your head gets really, really big and then it pops.
Yes, it does have that mode. It has a real epic movie energy.
Does that mean that it's not as bad as you thought, so it's good?
No, that ain't my bit, but you know, I'm not going to talk about Epic Movie at all anymore, ever again.
You can't hurt me anymore.
It's sealed off in that content. But Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5, by the way, they did a huge patch for that later, even after I finished playing it, where they fixed a lot of stuff and added content, and then the game just, you know, they stopped trying to do stuff for it because they lost the license to Tony Hawk. It's really sad, but weirdly enough, this has resulted in a totally bizarre situation where, Agro, I'm not sure if you believe me on this, but or expected this somehow, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 is $25 from GameStop used.
But what?
Fucking.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, no, that's an insane amount of money for the worst game in the series. Well, then again, Ride and Shred.
I was going to say, don't you own a Ride peripheral?
I do, but I've only played it once. Actually, did I play it or Shred?
So
what I'm hearing is
that you need to give Tony Hawk Ride a chance.
Yeah.
Did they make a Kinect one, or did they just put out an insane peripheral?
They put out an insane peripheral, because this was Activision, and Activision's really good at driving franchises into the ground. By the way, fun fact I would like to note, the reason more and more vehicles kept showing up in Tony Hawk games, especially Tony Hawk Underground 2, is because Activision's so insane that they saw the car driving segment at the beginning of Tony Hawk Underground 1, and they were like, that was great. Every level should have a unique vehicle.
No, I'm almost convinced that the next game in the series, American Wasteland, featured next to none of that?
Yes.
I don't think they had any.
Because I played through all of the story of that one, the PS2 one at least, and it just felt like what Underground 2 should have been, where it's a new story, and it's, you know,
yeah.
you're playing a skateboarding game, predominantly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Liked American Wasteland a lot.
There's no loading screens in it.
I think American Wasteland was fine. I think Project 8 is a better game, and it's a tragedy that that game just doesn't run right.
Project 8 is a better game, but Project 8 was the point where they were like, I feel like there was the internal decision of like, there's been 100 of these, you should be proficient at stuff by now. The goal has gone from 150,000 points to 8 million.
Oh, yeah. No, that was Tony Hawk 4. Tony Hawk 4 is the game primarily where that happens. Tony Hawk 4 is literally fucking insane.
Is it?
Because
I feel like Underground 1 and 2 didn't have things like get a trillion points.
No, they didn't. They rolled it way back after 4 because the main feedback they got was 4 was completely fucking insane. Like,
was 4 the... Which Tony Hawk introduced the fact that if you do like a lip or grind, you can just mash buttons to do different moves? Because I know Underground had it.
I'm pretty sure that was added in 4, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That on top of just the general difficulty of Thug 1 made that really easy to go through for the most part.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4, by the time you hit the end of the game, it expects you to get 3 million points in 2 minutes. And these aren't numbers made up.
that's what, like, the last competitions of Project 8 is, I feel like.
Maybe, but at least in that you have Nail the Trick and other things to slow shit down.
No, Nail the Trick is from Proving Ground.
Who do you think you're talking to?
Oh, that's right.
keep
it Project 8, okay.
Yeah. For the record,
what was the fucking thing where like they give you individual control of your feet?
That was Nail the Trick.
From Nail the Trick?
Yeah, that's Nail the Trick.
Did they make it way stupider in Proving Ground or something?
They did something else with it in Proving Ground. I think, what is it called? Nail the something.
Oh, they had Nail the Grab and Nail the Manual.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Keep in mind, Proving Ground's one of the few that I haven't played all the way through. The three that I
played Proving Ground up to when you own Eric Sparrow, and then I didn't play it any further than that.
Yeah, people reference the fact Eric Sparrow shows up in that one. I'm like, that's fucking hilarious. Didn't expect to see him ever again.
The only original character they have. It's really funny.
Yeah, that's true. Well, aside from Officer Dick, which they had to rename in Tony Hawk, what was it? Tony Hawk Downhill Jam, because it was aimed more at kids and it was on the Wii. They had to rename him to Officer Richard.
I was about to say, it better be Richard.
Why?
Pretty good.
Dick is still a real name, though.
Yeah, but we can't have it say Dick, so his name's Officer Richard now. I do not own Downhill Jam. I need to get that, because I actually do own basically every Tony Hawk game, which was really funny that I own all of these, and yet we go to start the first stream of Tony Hawktober, and my copy of Tony Hawk 1 won't boot. So,
uh-oh.
So Dan had to figure out in the course of 40 minutes how to burn a backup copy of a PS1 game and get it to boot on something in the house.
Multiplayer on Tony Hawk 1 runs real well.
Oh, yeah. Both the PS1 Tony Hawks run really great in multiplayer. I say both because only maniacs play Tony Hawk 3 on the PS1. This is why I'm glad Bob isn't here for this episode of Big Think Dimension.
He can feel it.
Yeah, he's somewhere right now just being like, someone's shit-talking me playing Tony Hawk 3 on the PS1 again. God damn it, Dan.
I think that's how I played it.
Oh, that's really how you played it? That's surprising.
I think so.
Because for those who don't know,
I played Tony Hawk 4 on PlayStation.
Okay, that is a shit game. That is a fucking awful game.
I didn't know it was like 2002. I didn't even have high-speed internet yet. I didn't get that till 2003.
Yeah, Tony Hawk 4 on the PS1, it may be the worst entry in the series. It's complicated. But when you start a goal in that one, because keep in mind, Tony Hawk 4 was the first one where you go up and talk to someone to get a goal. It intentionally sets you facing the opposite direction of the goal every time. So you will get 15 seconds to do a line via grinding, and it just faced you away from it. So fuck you. Every goal starts with you holding down and turning 180 degrees to begin to even see what you're supposed to do.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really bad. It is really bad. That skateboarding channel I bring up a lot, Rad Rat video. I think he ranked Tony Hawk 4 as the lowest ranking Tony Hawk pro skater game on the PS1. Because he does a video where he ranks all the PS1 skateboarding games, and I think he put 4 all the way at the bottom.
That says, what was the thing that dude said about Thug 2, or was that someone else?
That was. That was him. He was like, a lot of people were a little upset that the game focused less. Actually, it could have been him, or it could have been, what's the name of the guy who makes Noclip? Danny O'Dwyer. It was either him or Danny O'Dwyer that was like, yeah, Tony Hawk Underground 2 got into a bit of being less about skateboarding and more of just committing crimes.
Yes.
Well, Bam Margera was big in it.
Yeah, and he's a criminal, so...
They were shooting for a very specific demographic of young ones and teenagers who watched MTV.
Yeah,
people who what was Bam Margera's fucking show where he torments
Viva La Bam?
Here's every fucking episode of Viva La Bam. Hey, Mom, I set your house on fire. And then his mom goes, oh, bam. And that's every single episode of Viva La Bam.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible. It is. He was like a YouTuber before YouTube existed.
God, don't say that.
As Dan connects some dark dots.
Don't say that. He was just a YouTube prankster, but it was to his own family.
And he probably had insurance.
Yeah, the difference is that like he was super rich and was like, don't worry, I'll pay for the fact I filled your stairwell with snow and skied down it and smashed through your glass door.
God.
The ratings were good.
But also, yet- Bam shit was usually like, I'm going to destroy property and hurt myself, and the YouTubers are like, watch me abuse this child.
Yes.
Yeah. Child abuse is a very strong tenet of YouTube. That's why there's YouTube for kids.
This is like the split in the timeline where there's the good future and the bad future. The good future where it's like, they're doing something stupid, but at least they're not truly harming people besides themselves. And the bad future where they're burning money in front of homeless people.
This is getting too depressing. I need to close this off by saying, Tony October, very excited to do some streams. Maybe I'll beat Tony Hawk's American Wasteland sometime this month, because I've never beaten it.
I'd do a death stream with you of Wasteland, because I liked that one a lot.
Yeah, no.
I'm one of the 10 fans of that game.
I mean, it's better than Underground 2 by a lot, and I would argue it's better than Proving Ground. Bob seems to think highly of Proving Ground, a thing I've never understood, but...
Proving Ground is so weird. I definitely think it's worse than...
Yeah.
I think it's definitely worse than Project 8. I didn't spend a whole lot of time with Underground 2.
Yeah.
So I can't, like, speak to anything about that game's quality, but all the bullshit it sounds like they added, probably...
Like playing as the kid in the wheelchair and doing wheelchair combos and tricks?
Yes.
That's... I feel like that could be okay if it's, like, presented right.
Right, but it is.
No.
But I can't imagine they presented it right.
No.
This
is the part where I would like to know I owned Thug 2 Remix on the PSP at launch.
Oh my god! Oh my god, when is the video?
That's a great question. I'm hoping to do something on it. You know, they actually... one last note on Tony Hawk before I totally move on. Project 8 is the first time a game that was designed for the next-gen console sold better on a prior-gen console. So the best-selling version of Project 8 is the PS2 one. Over 2 million copies sold. See, that doesn't surprise you, but that means that doesn't apply to Tony Hawk 3. So when Tony Hawk 3 was primarily developed for next-gen, the PS2 being the lead development platform, it was the best-selling version on PS2. With Project 8, because Project 8 is like really close to the PS3 launch and a year in on the 360 comes out, people are like, we don't own those fucking consoles, they're expensive. So for
PS3, $600.
Hey man, $500 for the version without SD cards or
and
storage space. It's not great. But what that means, because people who probably don't know the business dealings of Tony Hawk, that means the best-selling version of a Neversoft-developed game is the one being ported by some other company. Can you imagine you made a fucking game and then the external studio that quickly shoved it out on every other platform makes bank while you're just fucked?
What horrible minds is Neversoft in right now? Are they in like
they're dead.
Call of Duty map
they're
mines?
They're just completely dead.
Oh, are they?
Oh yeah, the company is dead. They ended by doing a video of them burning the giant eyeball.
Yep.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, they were made to work on the Guitar Hero series, and then when that dried up, they were absorbed by Infinity Ward.
So you throw them in every yearly nightmare they can.
Yeah, so like, think about it this way. They made them do Guitar Hero. Activision burned out both fucking series simultaneously, and then they shoved the corpse of Neversoft in the corpse of Infinity Ward.
Mm. They released 5 fucking Guitar Hero games in 1 year. No wonder that shit died.
Yeah, no. Like,
never forget. that they killed Guitar Hero, they killed Rock Band, and then both came back in the same year.
At the same time and killed each other again.
Guitar Hero being probably the most interesting because they had a completely new controller and a different approach to the music that wasn't very good.
Yeah.
Didn't it also have the shit where you couldn't buy songs, you had to buy tickets to play the song?
Yes.
And you could never own a song?
Yes.
Yeah, there was like also like live, it was like, we're making it like real radio where like there's live feeds of songs coming in, so you would jump into those, you know, because it's going to play a set of these songs.
Whole thing just comes off as some fucking boomer thought up this game. It's, you know, I'm not normally one to
also
phrase things
as
that.
It's a completely new control set to sell you new controllers.
Right. Well, you know, that one also came out on smartphone, so you could play Guitar Hero on your smartphone in a public park.
All right, we need to escape.
Yeah, so we're shutting this segment down. I wrapping up both of my tangents, or at least the first tangent I went on here, I haven't played any games this week, but something that was brought to my attention because I bought the fucking laptop to do work on the fucking channel. I didn't think about this. That thing could do ray tracing. We could go play some Quake with ray tracing, you guys.
Raw.
Probably.
I cannot wait to be like, hey Dan, what you doing? He's like, I'm just hanging out at home, finished editing a thing. I'm like, okay, you want to play some Overwatch?
No, I'm too busy playing Quake with ray tracing. I can't play Overwatch.
We got Overwatch with ray tracing. Does Overwatch have ray tracing?
God, no. Blizzard will never put a cutting-edge graphics feature into their fucking games. They want it to run on everything.
True. They want it to run on potatoes.
Oh, fucking Hearthstone with ray tracing.
That'd be funny. I still wouldn't play it because it's a shitty card game.
And with that, I'm done with my...
I played hundreds of hours. I hate Hearthstone.
Yeah, let's go to Feel. Feel, care to elaborate and then talk about what games you've played since last time?
Okay. Part of playing a fucking card game is you see the cards your opponent plays, and if you're aware of the game, you can kind of guess what they might have.
Yeah.
And then Hearthstone introduced 47 mechanics that boil down to add random cards to your hand from space.
Not random cards from your deck, Dan. Random cards that exist.
Because it's digital, so there's no physical equivalent, so the cards can do whatever the fuck they want. So, they introduced, one, they made cards that just give you random cards. Two, they introduced a mechanic called Discover, which is just, here's three random cards, pick one. You get it now.
Wow.
So, it became impossible to predict what anybody had at any time, and it became way more RNG based because instead of just will I draw something, it's now will my magic card that gives me bullshit give me something good.
This is the funniest shit because I followed Hearthstone really hard at the very beginning when it was in beta and then when it was released for about 6 to 8 months, where they pushed esports on it incredibly hard. And I saw people like, I remember Total Biscuit making a lot of videos and things about, this is really fucking stupid. This game's too RNG heavy for you to make it a fucking esport. And now it's just clown.
No, it's not random bullshit. It's a thriving and fluid metagame.
Not armchair devs. It's not armchair devs.
Are you sure?
Oh, fuck, come on.
So what you been playing, Phil?
Code Vein.
God damn it! I was just about to say Blood Pipe Dream. It all links.
Now,
Bob dodged a bullet.
Yeah, he did.
We talked about we briefly alluded to the fact that Tony Hawk's American Wasteland, to ensure it has no loading screens, has really fucking long hallways between areas.
Oh no. Why is that relevant?
Code Vein
right
also has this.
God damn it.
Yes.
But you can tell when the loading starts because the frame rate shits itself.
Time to find out whether KZ will buy this game by the end of the segment.
It goes down like 5 to 5 frames a second for like 1.5 seconds when you hit that loading gate. and you can still sprint so fast that they have to throw up a fog door at the end of the hallway.
Hmm.
Which, to be fair, Dark Souls has to do sometimes, too. But it's just... The best way for me to describe Code Vein, I think, is, like, this is a launch title for the Vita 2.
That's a bold vision.
Like, if Sony put out a Vita 2 that was maybe about as strong as the Switch, maybe a little bit better, this would be a launch title for it.
That's awful.
I think that any game that was delayed a whole year, it has such a lack of, like, polish is mind-boggling.
There had to have been a core part of this game that was fucked beyond
repair. Because, like, here... And the game isn't broken. The game works fine. But there's just stuff like, okay, I'm going to open a door and I teleport to the knob. Like, my character teleports 5 feet to the right where the knob is. Or it's like, pull this lever and I'm, like, standing on the wrong side of the lever so it teleports me to the other side so I can do the pulling animation. Same thing with ladders. You can get on a ladder from either side. You just teleport to the correct side.
That's good. If someone's attacking you, it'd be a cool dodge.
Very positive.
Nothing personal, Latacoon.
Also, Dark Souls 1 kind of had the problem where shit, you could backstab everything to death really, really easily because, like, they turned to face you really slowly.
Mm.
And then to correct this, Dark Souls 2 and 3 made enemies spin like they're standing on a fucking record player. Code Vein decided to fix this issue by making the backstab unbelievably precise on where you need to stand.
I experienced this during the beta, where I would get it sometimes, but 80% of the time, it's like, no.
Yeah, that's how it goes. Like, some enemies, sometimes I can chain backstab a big enemy to death. Other times I'm like, where do you want me to stand? This motherfucker's ass is 5 feet wide. Where is the backstab spot? This game... Like, KZ calling this a 6.5 is pretty accurate. I'm enjoying it, but God, there's so much horrible, stupid shit in this game. First of all, I wouldn't know because my brain refuses to process it.
I knew it. I knew this would be your approach where you're like, nah, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but I'm hitting stuff.
I mean, I kind of have the idea, like, There was a generic catastrophe, and now you have weird anime vampires, and they need blood to not go crazy. If you don't get blood, you turn into one of the monsters, and hang out with your anime vampire buddies and find the roots of the blood tree to get blood.
And you have a generic scantily clad anime girl with you who has no shoes.
You have the Fire Maiden from Dark Souls 3, except her tits are out.
Hmm.
A stunning change.
But it it's way overcomplicated.
Hmm.
Have you ever played a game where you're like, the core game isn't that great, so they decided to bury that in systems?
I have played Ubisoft games, yes.
Where it's like, you level up, but that doesn't increase your stats. It's not like Dark Souls where you just like, okay, I leveled up, now I get a stat point. It's, you level up and you get more health and stamina and you do more damage, but your stats are determined by your class.
Oh, and that confused me at first.
And you can change your class at any time. It's an equip, and because it's called a blood code.
Raw? It's real raw.
And you keep getting more, and you get more. You find the blood code, and you can equip it, and then you can unlock skills that are like MMO-esque cooldowns that related to the blood code. But to unlock all the skills, because some are super good and like have glitches on them when you try to select them from the learn menu. So you have to find items, and then, you unlock new things by seeing everyone's tragic backstory.
Now, to describe it, I played that beta where they make you go through and fight random dude with a gas mask who turns into a big guy at the end.
Yeah, that's the first boss.
And then you beat him, and then you go down the corridors of darkness where they slowly make you
show
walk
you his,
and you learn
show
about
show you his backstory, yeah. And every single character has that, and multiple, and some characters who don't exist have that. Like, they're characters from the backstory of other characters. And you just slowly walk through the hallway and see uninteresting story segments. Luckily, somebody's like, oh, you can skip that. And I'm like, okay, never looking at one of these ever again. Just not ever. I do think it's funny how in every Dark Souls game, like, FromSoft slaps you in the mouth and like, you're a fucking nobody. The world's already destroyed and you're just a peasant trying to fucking fuck you. You're nothing. And this takes, like, the opposite approach where you're a super badass who has a unique power to absorb every blood code and see everyone's past.
I like Chad's.
Really good character creator, by the way. Absolutely incredible. Like, so many options. It's ridiculous.
That game would lose, like, a point and a half, probably, if it didn't have that good a character
it
creator.
Would. It's just too complicated. There's too many systems. I would rather just pick my stats than have this weird system of like, okay, I want to use a heavy weapon. Well, I have to select one of the classes that has a high weight limit, otherwise it makes my rolls shitty. Okay, that class has no MP, so I can't use any of the abilities. The abilities are really fun, by the way. It's stuff like, you have really basic stuff like shoot a fireball, make your attack better for a little bit. But then you have stuff like, teleport 10 feet forward into the air and do a cross slash. So you can do some really fun stuff where you run up on an enemy, he hasn't noticed you yet, you hit him a couple times, he's about to swing, you do that, and he misses you because you're in the teleport state, and then you do a bunch of damage by slashing him twice.
That's pretty
stuff like
anime.
That's really fun.
Yeah, that sounds like anime.
So stuff like that is really fun. Stuff like they made like four monsters is less fun.
Oh my god.
There's also might be the most mind-numbing area I've ever encountered in a video game where it's just like, here's our version of Anne Orlando. It looks exactly like Anne Orlando from Dark Souls, except Anne Orlando was like a zone. This is an endless maze of identical white catwalks. And sometimes there's a room. But it's mostly identical white catwalks where you have to like fall off the edge onto lower catwalks to climb up a ladder and be on a higher catwalk. And I'm in there for 2 hours and fight a boss. And I look, how much of this area have I mapped? 43%, and I want to die.
I have a lot of people I follow who are playing this game. And when I started going, wait, what do you mean that? What do you mean there's a poison swamp area?
Don't worry, it's not actually poison. It's just a swamp. And it's not even really a swamp, it's just like an area underground that has ankle-deep water. It is not poison, but there's a reason it's not poison. It's not poison because poison fucking kills your shit almost instantly in this game.
Hmm.
So I was gonna say, like, I know you gotta do your Dark Souls game, but you have to fucking do all the bad shit Dark Souls does, too?
I have fought 5 bosses. Two of them, their entire game plan seems to be give you a status effect, and status effects in this game are nightmarish. Poison will drain like 90% of your max health before it goes away.
Aren't you a vampire?
Another boss inflicts slow, which does nothing but make you move at half speed.
Really, you're really selling me on this, man.
I still am having a lot of fun with it. It's just like, boy, you didn't get a lot of money for this. I'm genuinely curious what happened, because this game does not... I think it might look worse than the 2018 footage.
I mean, the 2018 footage ran at, like, 10 frames a second, so that's not surprising.
It runs better, but it's like, what happened? How did you take an extra year and it not... Like, you still have the, I teleport 5 feet to open a door.
When I played the technical test beta thing they did, I didn't necessarily notice a lot of hitching or, like, severe frame rate problems, but I did notice that all the textures looked aggressively ugly.
I haven't noticed a lot of... The only time I've noticed, like, frame drops is when you hit that loading gate and it's like... And you, like, that's hear the hilarious. Gears grind.
And that's when the sirens sound and the game transforms into a slideshow.
At one point, you just... You find a Dark Souls elevator. It looks exactly like every elevator from Dark Souls.
Got a crank.
Yeah. It's like ornate, like, metal and has, like, a button in the center. And I get on it, and you have an NPC assisting you at all times. Like, you build, like, social ranks with these characters. You give them gifts and stuff and can trade social points for items from them.
Hmm.
I think it might be tied to one of the good or bad endings, because I think there's multiple endings in this. But you get on the elevator and are going down, and the other character says, "Huh, I wonder where this came from." And I'm like, "Fuck you." Well, there's a Dark Souls elevator, because Dark Souls. I do think it's funny that there's a boss in this game that is just stripper Hatsune Miku.
What?
She's a big blue monster lady with Hatsune Miku's pigtails, and she has a spear and sometimes does pole dancing moves on the spear, and her titties are out.
There it is. Maximum anime game.
Aggro's like, "I'm waiting for it.
There it is. Thank you, Phil. We couldn't have lived without knowing that.
I will say this. It's this anime and has this many systems and still did not remind me of an Inti Creates game.
Well, that's good. That's something. At very least, man, that's something.
Distinct lack of cyber elves.
I'm going to post this. Post a picture of this boss.
God fucking damn it.
I didn't need to see that.
Yeah,
I didn't.
You did.
No, I didn't. Phil, did you play anything else this week?
No, that's all I played.
Oh, okay. Hey, KZ, what have you been playing?
So, Borderlands 3 is a video game made by...
Okay, bye.
I finished up Link's Awakening, so of course I have to jump back on Borderlands 3,
well,
see
yeah.
how that's going. I played another hour and a half and quit.
Oh, yeah? Is the writing that bad, or...?
The writing has been... As I described it last time, caustic.
Mm-hmm.
What with its use of almost a Family Guy-esque quality, only worse, where we have a joke and we're going to continue to tell you that joke and repeat it over and over again. 12 sentences too long.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You desperately want it to end. No one's laughing anymore, but it's still going.
It's that authentic Borderlands feel.
Yeah. I've seen so many people say that Borderlands 2 was when the writing was at its best, and 3 ruined it.
That's nightmarish.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't kidding with the bring back Anthony Birch comments. Those are real comments from people. Because this stuff isn't great. On top of that, just the way level scaling in these games is just so fucking rough. Where if you're one level below bosses, you're just going to have a bad time.
Yeah, they're not.
I was 2 or 3 levels below a boss that I reached, and I was like, all right, let me do some quests, and it took me a good few hours to get up to that level.
Mm-hmm.
Because some quests don't give you a lot of experience. All the side quests are where all the side stories with the bad writing is. Some of them take forever. I got to the level that matched the boss. The boss still took away all of my shield health and brought me to, like, 10 normal health, and I went, I'm done. The boss isn't summoning henchmen, so I can't kill them to get a second wind if I'm downed. Mm-hmm. This is just a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Grind more.
I'm like, no! Because grinding leads to writing!
Right? That's the only thing I was on the fence about with Borderlands 3, because I loved playing 1 and 2, and I could ignore the writing all day long, but if it's going to be that grindy, fuck that.
It feels a little bit too grindy. I don't know if there's maybe difficulty levels. Maybe I could scale it back. But just, there are moments where I'm like, this feels great. Like, the skills you have on cooldown, like mine's the one where you summon in an extra clone that's shooting at the enemy. You're popping shields down. You have a little propeller dude who flies around, a little drone that shoots things. Hmm. And you're picking up guns. But then if a character speaks... Or if anything close to a visible threat or a boss, because the bosses are very hit and miss. Like, there's only, like, a couple that I'm like, this is a good boss design. like one where you're put into a chamber where there it's like a dance floor with big like subwoofers in the middle and in the back of the room, and he like summons and makes them like shoot out really heavy sound waves, and they'll just insta kill you if you're in whatever area they're in. And it's like, all right, I have to look and see which ones are about to glow and then stay out of that area. That's one of their good bosses. The rest are just whatever. It's a normal enemy, only it's big.
Overall, how would you compare boss design in this game to, say, the pre-sequel?
I did not play the pre-sequel.
Yeah, I knew that
for you.
good news, there's an entire stage that is just the pre-sequel where you go on like a meteor with like moon gravity.
The moon gravity thing was fine. The bosses in that game sucked ass.
I just imagine any time KZ interacts with any NPC, he's like on edge. Because like, what is their horrible joke going to be like? And he just eventually talks to one and they just start doing Gangnam Style and his soul leaves his body.
They're... Man. There's some bad shit in this game, man. Like being described to me like quests where it's like, oh man, here's VR gaming. You test out our VR gaming thing, and oh, people really like shipping out games that aren't finished. Here's our character T-posing as a glitch.
Oh, man.
We need to stop, because I'm losing enamel hearing this.
Yeah, no, this is bad.
I only played 90 minutes of it, and that was enough for me to go, you know what? There are parts of this that I enjoyed my time. I don't regret dropping down the money necessarily. There are like 6 hours where I'm like, this is a great time. I haven't encountered any bad writing. Some of the writing is okay. There are times where it doesn't anger me.
Wow, there are times where it doesn't anger you is a really high bar for media.
Put that shit on the box.
Borderlands is a series that I feel like you jump into not expecting to be thrilled by its story or writing. It's something where it's like, gameplay has to be king because everything else fucking sucks.
KZ, you say that, but so many people liked Borderlands 2's writing and the Telltale game.
You see, Telltale game's different writers on that. Like, I saw a lot of people going, I don't feel bad about Troy not being Reese in this game because the writing of Reese is so bad in this that it's not the same character anyway.
Wow.
Because because I didn't really make note that the majority of the writing about Reese in this game is, I got a creepy mustache now. Do you like my mustache?
What?
Yeah, he has like a really bad handlebar mustache. And apparently at the end of his quest line, you do something to his mustache. I'm glad I didn't reach it.
Is this just fucked? Do they just like, here's a character people really liked. What do we do? Let's just throw shit at this fucking dartboard and do whatever.
So here's the thing. I need to stress this. During the development of this game, Troy Baker grew a mustache.
It's okay, Phil. It's not random bullshit. It's a vibrant and fluid writing material.
I don't want to believe it is just a malicious thing, but with the
I didn't even think it was a malicious thing. My brain went to, they were going to get Troy Baker back and that was the joke, but now I'm just thinking, it's like, are you fucking making fun of... I'm saving it for when I fucking eviscerate Pitchford when we get to the news.
Yeah,
I have
go ahead.
To save this fury.
Yeah,
okay. That's all for the Borderlands 3 stuff. I should probably, to counterbalance feel for next week, maybe I should pick up The Surge 2 so I can see if that is a good Souls game.
No, you know what? This is no longer a gaming podcast. Let's talk about anything else.
So I was watching the premiere of AEW while I was in a hospital waiting room this week.
I knew that's where it was going to go.
Yes! Finally, we get to talk about wrestling in the Big Think Dimension. Damn, where'd you go?
If you're wondering why I haven't protested, it's because I became stone.
I thought it was, you can't protest it because it's right in the room with you.
You can't stop the signal.
I'm like, Aggro, we're not going to talk about it. He's like, yeah, what are you going to do? Make me? And I'm like, yeah. And then we wrestle. And I'm like, no, I pick up what I ate.
Well,
deep is it?
To try and get us away from wrestling. I was like, all right, well, I don't want to grind in Borderlands because every act in this, aside from progressing, feels like hell. So I just played Final Fantasy XIV instead.
How did that go?
Finally catch up. It went fantastically. Jumping between them, I'm like, oh, this is really, really solid. I finished up all of the post-content they made from the previous expansion so I could play the brand new one that came out, Shadowbringers, earlier this year, and it actually is top quality. I can see why some people were alluding to maybe it being the best Final Fantasy thing that they've done in ever, because a lot of the writing is incredibly strong, the soundtrack is incredible, and as an MMO, you kind of forget it is sometimes, because they've been leaning more into solo duties or instances where you go to a glowing thing and then they create a single player focused scenario where you run in and there's cutscenes, there's boss fights, there's solo boss fights, moments in which you're playing as completely different characters. And yeah, they're like, oh, here's one of the NPCs you've been hanging out with. You're just playing as him now, and this is his solo rival fight.
Hope you know Dragoon rotation.
They're like, hey, you're going to play as this dude now. Fight his Virgil. And then it's just... It's like this, and then it's a multi-phase boss fight where the dude transforms, and it's all handled surprisingly really well.
Damn.
And the dungeons have all been incredibly varied in like their locations, boss gimmicks, and the new abilities I've gained because I run a dragoon in it. All the new abilities that they've added have been really good, focusing more on, all right, you've reached this level. This move you had before, we're just replacing with a better version of it. Or it's like, oh, your jump? It's just twice as fast now, and you jump higher.
Mm.
Which is good, because if they keep adding more buttons, just there's too many.
You might go insane.
Yeah, because this is an MMO that can work entirely on a controller, and they've managed to still make that work.
Man, KZ... fucking old school WoW had the thing where every single rank of your spells could be a different button, so healers had to have like every single rank of their spells bound so they didn't waste mana.
God.
Oh, healer UI mods.
Like, you would think playing an MMO on a controller would be the equivalent of playing Heavy Rain or Detroit, where it's like, alright, you're gonna need to press this button, hold the controller at this angle, then press these other two buttons and break your hand. But no, it's all just holding a trigger and then hitting the face buttons or something on a D-pad.
It's a great setup.
Yeah, that's why 14 is so focused on, like, not standing in the wrong spot.
Yeah. And boy, do they make a bunch of fun boss fight mechanics that are AoEs being everywhere and kind of getting into the flow of running away from stuff. Before Shadowbringers, they make you do a solo boss fight that toward the end, this thing's throwing balls that are slowly going near you, and there's six AoEs on screen.
Makes being a black mage
move,
real
bitch.
Fun.
It's incredibly fun, but also filled with anxiety. The characters are really good, the writing, music, the story, everything's just been top class, and just, I feel like even just saying it's good for an MMO is an insult. It just is a really, really solid game. There's been some decent payoffs so far, and I have nothing but praise for it. I feel like the only problem that could potentially come from experiencing is maybe getting level gated, but even then I don't think it's too bad this time. I came in like a level ahead of the curve because I played it late, so I was able to get experience before the expansion's story started, which will tend to happen. But I haven't been forced to stop at all, which has been good. And I will probably have finished the story of this by next week, so I can say whether things fell apart or not. But I'm getting pretty close, and it's all been really fresh and exciting for this. Like, I feel like there's still they still have new ideas, and they're all good ideas and not bad ideas. Also, there's just a lot of Final Fantasy IX in this, it feels like, so far. Like, they have two NPCs that are just those two jesters from FF9. but they're girls.
Ooh.
They're like, come.
I've read that doujin.
Yeah, they're like, come to the city where we sell you into slavery. You must do work for the rich people. If you do, you get to live in this nice place. And if you fuck up, you're gonna have a bad time. But yeah, overall, having a really great time with that. That's all I played this week.
Cool. I saw you were doing Final Fantasy 14 over on your Twitch channel. I checked out a bit of that once to
feel a little bit better about playing it and not making like content. I was like, I'll do a stream of it, and then the rest of my time has been rendering videos and then being like, well, I'll do it while I'm doing this.
Yeah, that always is a problem of like, if you have one main machine and you're rendering videos, that's all you're fucking doing. So
yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the downsides of PC gaming. Mm. Is that if you're rendering videos for your channel, you're not playing those games.
Yeah, I think that's also the best thing, is that this is an MMO that works perfectly well on console, and also there's cross-play. Like, I have PC friends, and I can group up with them, even if they're playing on PC, or back when this ran on PS3, which, by the way, was an embarrassment.
That shit ran at
15, and when they said, we're dropping PS3 support, they said it at, like, their big fan fest. The crowd exploded with excitement.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like every time they say, we're dropping this old shitty version, people cheer.
Yeah, because then they reveal this big raid boss, and they're like, oh, but we recreated this iconic super attack from an old Final Fantasy game. And you're like, yeah, that's why they dropped support. That's why they dropped 32-bit operating systems.
It's always stuff like fucking... yeah, your inventory has to be small because of the PS3. Or, like, we can't have as much housing because of the PS3.
You're right. Yeah. Right.
It keeps getting better. I can't wait for the PS5 to see, like, this, you know, see them step up things a little bit more.
Yeah.
One thing I did forget to mention about this that makes the expansions experience better is, we mentioned it the last time I talked about 14 on the podcast, they have a system called Trust, where the NPCs, your party in the game's story, you can just queue with them for a dungeon, and you can just play the game like a single-player game.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, really good.
That's the fucking dream.
Where I play as a DPS character, so queues could sometimes take anywhere from 5 minutes to, like, 30. Now I can just hit two buttons and I'm already
there.
Yeah,
that's, like, the struggle, because there's always so many more DPS than...
And... maybe you want to go to the bathroom or do something really quick mid-dungeon, you can, because they're just NPCs just hanging out with you. You can take shit slowly.
Come back and your chat's full of bots. Go, go, go.
God.
It's so immersive.
It made that a lot better. It's so immersive. They're like, hey, well, you want to pay $40 to get 10 million gil? Click this tiny URL link.
And then if you click it, you're banned.
I bought gold when I played World of Warcraft, because I was like, I'm not going to get the trillion gold you need for the flying mount. That's not going to happen. Like, I'll pay $20.
I can't handle any of your WoW stories.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's that many that are unique to me. They're mostly just about the game.
You're right.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about WoW.
I don't know. I find the story of, I didn't attend most of my classes senior year of high school because I played WoW, is a pretty, you know,
yeah,
pretty poignant story. Pretty powerful.
Yeah,
but, well, and I hated school.
But hey, Dr. Agro, we're going to talk about what games you've played in the last week after I talk about some games I forgot. Teased you there.
Oh no!
I played some more of Barry Bradford's Putt Panic Party. That game's actually really fun.
Featuring Dan video games.
Right.
It really comes together when you do multiplayer, though, because of the whole, like, for those who missed last week, it's a putt-putt golf thing. Just a budget putt-putt golf game on the fucking, or mini golf game on the Switch. But it has a timer mechanic where everyone putts simultaneously and it does the collision for the different balls hitting each other. So it at the beginning of the a hole, it cuts down, it counts down from 9 seconds, and then after 9 seconds pass, everyone immediately putts the shots they set up. And every time you putt, it gets a second shorter to the point where it's like, if you're doing terribly, your last putt, you get 1 second to set it up. It's the funniest shit in the world. So I played that with Tosh before the last podcast, and that was fun. I did three-player with Tosh and my friend Brett. You can do some malicious shit in that, where you're like, okay, that person's ball is on this side of the hole. It's going to take them this long to hit it there. I'm staring at the strength and the angle they're shooting. I'm going to shoot my ball between their ball and the hole, so they knock me in, and their ball just flies off. It is some really spiteful shit. But that game is proving really fun, and luckily it's like a budget thing. I think it's between $6 and $10. I can't remember right now. Disclaimer, we were provided a review copy by Thomas Hopper, the developer of the game. I am a biased individual because I got a $5 free game. That's how that works, right? Which is why, you know, if Burger King gave me one of their burgers for free, I would be like, this is a fantastic burger.
So, speaking of, now I hate to step on your thing, but...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I can now reveal the great news.
Oh, no.
During the process of us recording our first podcast, I sent an email a little bit concerned, because the inquiry I sent about last week just did not go through, but I am now able to confirm, as I look at them here, I would like to thank a future collaborator with us has sent us 4 PS4 Ultimate Level codes.
Jesus Christ.
Of the game Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Okay, cool. I look forward to playing that.
Hey there, folks. This is KZ from the editing room. Now, Feel may have seemed a little bit calm and collected in regards to this whole review code business. Well, that would be a little inaccurate. Here's a clip of me breaking the news to him a few days ago.
What is it?
It is a Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Oh!
I feel like it would have been wrong to not include that clip on any piece of content. I hope you enjoy. After these noises, we'll get back to the podcast.
I'm gonna play it. This will be my first time engaging with a Ubisoft game in quite a while.
What's this breeze? A bullet flies by.
this game looked interesting. They asked me if I was interested. I went, oh shit, I do a podcast. Oh shit, I have to force Field to play this.
I look forward to learning what it is, because the E3 presentation was like an unending omnidirectional nightmare, and I couldn't figure out which Tom Clancy game was what.
It was the one where the Punisher / Shane from The Walking Dead brought out his dog.
See, it's all a blur. I remember that happened. I don't even remember what game that happened during, but I'm pretty sure I know this game, and I'm looking forward to playing that.
Yeah, maybe we'll find a way to make a really dumb Gigaboots video out of it.
Yeah, who knows? We'll just be like all those other YouTubers where we play a 4-player game, we each record our screens, and then we scream nonstop, and we pretend this is comedy. I'm looking forward to that. When do you know about when that game code drops? I don't think that... Wait, do our codes work already? But we would be under NDA? Oh, okay.
We'll be able to post content / with no restrictions.
Okay.
Mostly because I'm sure the embargo lifted. The game will be playable by everyone in 57 minutes.
The game is
launching in like an hour.
Yeah, there was a weird thing about that though, where people who bought the expensive edition came out early, got it before any journalists could talk about it because the NDAs expired when the game came out.
Yeah, because they're like, well, we don't want you posting any reviews about it just yet, because it's an online game, and it's about that experience.
Oh, okay. Yes, wait, I know the phrase. Okay, I believe you. But yeah, looking forward to that. And then there's one game I did not get to cover earlier. That I could not talk about last week because it was not out. And it will be out by the time this podcast goes up. It's a puzzle game for the Switch called Krosnik Plus. That's spelt cross like you would expect. N-I-Q and then the plus sign. It's basically a puzzle game with a distinctly Y2K aesthetic, as they phrase it. So it looks like the background for Lumines, or it looks like DDR menus, as it does.
Yuck.
It's,
yeah,
no.
I was confused.
Jesus, you are damaged individuals, one. Two.
I hang out with Feel. It's not my fault. He has my asthma.
Hey, I have never called it anything but yick.
All I'm saying is you're giving the man too much power by retaining his game in your headspace. But moving back to a good game, or a game worth talking about as opposed to yick, Krosnik is like a 6x6 grid on screen of three different colors of squares, and you need to arrange them into a cross. You can have it set up on any part of the grid, and as you progress through, you know, clearing blocks, it'll make it harder by making some of them you can't move at all, some of them you can't wrap around, because as you move blocks off the left side of the screen, it'll scroll to the right, or if you move it off the top, it'll scroll to the bottom. It'll make it more difficult by locking it in various different ways. I thought the aesthetic was really great with this game. Like, I think people should look up a video to experience that. It has really nice visuals, very nice art styling, and I do like the music. But something about how the game mechanically works as a puzzle game just didn't click for me. And I'm trying to think, like, the last time a puzzle game felt like this for me, where I was like, I dig everything but the actual mechanics of what's happening. I may just need to spend more time with it, and I am going to, like, play it a little bit more before I just completely stop. But for some reason, the gameplay of matching up a cross of these colors, for me, comes across as a more meditative thing. Because keep in mind, it supports both using face buttons and sticks, or using the touchscreen to swipe. Like, I feel like it should be a meditative act, and it's on a timer, and you're going to die if you don't do it, and you're supposed to be going for score. And for some reason, it doesn't feel like something I can do fast enough for that to feel good, and it's not, you know, meditative enough to be a more passive game. So it's like a puzzle game that's asking me to do a thing really fast that, at least in my opinion, just doesn't feel very fun to do quickly.
Mm.
But I dig the aesthetic. Like, it's a Dreamcast commercial, basically.
Mm.
Like, there's just something about it that's, like, really great in that way. Almost comes off as, like, DDR-esque UI design in some ways. But, it crystallizes that so well, but the actual mechanic of the game just doesn't do anything for me. And I tried to, I was like, maybe I'm just not good at it. And then I got better. And I'm better than, you know, of course, I got the game before it went live. This was another game we got a code for.
Yeah. So that's how that works.
So, yes. Yeah. But, like, I was better than most of the people playing it, so I know I wasn't just outright objectively terrible at it. Like, I wasn't rock-bottom trash at it. It's just something about it wasn't clicking in a way that made me think, like, ah, yeah, this is great. It's thrilling. So, I don't know.
It didn't click the way Puzzle Quest does.
It doesn't click the way Puzzle Quest does, but really it doesn't click the way, like, Puyo Puyo, you know, Tetris Attack. Tetris, duh. Or even most Columns. Puzzle games. I would say it actually feels a bit less, like, if I were to rank it mechanically as a puzzle game, I'd probably have to put it below Wario's Woods, which I don't know, maybe that was a devastating thing to say about a puzzle game, but I think Wario's Woods is a really fun game that just feels a little bit too clunky. I'd put the slightly below that, where it's not even that it's clunky to pull off the cool things you want to pull off. It's that, like, the moment where you make the cross doesn't even feel like a momentous thing. You can't chain moves in this, per se. So, like, there's nothing to set up, so there's no major payoff. You're just doing one cross at a time. And maybe that's the core problem. Maybe that's the core problem for me. There's no way to set up a chain because you can't predict what colors will replace the colors that you cleared by forming the cross. But visually, a very neat game. Apparently, it was kickstarted. I do want to see more stuff from this developer just because I think the visuals and styling of it is really great. It's just mechanically not really firing for me on all cylinders. But we plan on getting a video up of this name, Barry Bradford's Putt Panic Party, and also CrossNick Plus sometime in the next week or so. So that way people can visually see these games. Anyways, those are the games I played. Dr. Agro, now over an hour into this podcast, you have the right to talk about video games.
I will be heard.
God, it's over an hour.
I've been chipping away little bits of River City Girls and Daemon X Machina.
Nice.
I swear, for the first hour of River City Girls, I thought, like, man, this game is just really, really boring.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you unlock two moves and, like, oh my God, this game is amazing. As soon as I was able to stunner a cheerleader, I'm like, this is the best game ever made by man.
This is all I ever wanted.
I'm starting to get the feeling that Daemon X Machina is never going to get more complex or interesting in its gameplay.
Yeah, I think it basically comes out of the gate with what it's working with.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'm fine with. It's a pretty relaxing experience every mission. Mm-hmm. Just sometimes the boss fights are just kind of flat feeling. Like, I'm never sure if I'm doing the right thing to beat the boss quickly enough.
Oh, yeah.
Because it'll, like it's an airplane, and it flies up and shoots lasers, and if you try to fly up there, you get pushed back down by the computer, and it's going to take 40 fucking minutes or some bullshit.
Oh.
I still think I was just doing that fight wrong, and I don't know how.
Yeah.
But the thing I've been the most excited about this week is I've been playing The Sojourn, which is a puzzle game for... it's on PS4, Xbox One, and Windows.
Windows?
it's one of those 3D first-person puzzle games in the style of like The Witness and Rime, where, you know, it's all painterly, and oh, look at all this shit, and it's got a story, but not really. It's just got statues of blindfolded people that keep appearing in different phases of a boy growing up, and it's meaningful, but it's not... Like, I really don't think it's symbolism. I think the people designing this game just went, well, this is how puzzle games look, right? So they just filled it with, like, a crumbling city and weird statues and shit. But the actual puzzles are really fun to solve. It's, like, you've got different statues that do different stuff. Like, you swap places with this statue. That statue makes the bridge appear for a limited amount of time. This mm-hmm. one is a beam of dark energy, and when you're infused with dark energy, everything's different and all the statues turn on, and it's really simple, mechanically simple puzzles that are, like, dense to figure out. Like, mm-hmm. it's not something you just poke at everything until it falls into place. You look at everything you've got, and then you just sit there for a few minutes going, well, shit, I know it's technically possible.
Yeah, I'm really glad you described these mechanics, because watching the trailer for The Sojourn, I'm just like, I'm noticing the Ocarina of Time / Lords of Shadow 1 light beam puzzle. Please tell me the whole game isn't this. And yeah,
the weirdest thing about that light beam, if you're seeing it in the trailer,
mm-hmm.
like, when you're in the dark world, which is what you're in when you're in that beam, you can activate any of the statues.
Okay.
A statue is only activated if you're in the dark world or it has the relic in it. So you can take the relic, put it in that beam statue, turn it on, step into the dark world, take the relic out, and that beam will still be on as long as you are standing inside of it.
Okay.
Which, for a how do I get to the other side of this locked gate style puzzle is some fucking gigabrain shit, and I love it.
Okay, so overall, mechanically, the game's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just aesthetically and narratively that you start to almost feel like it's cynical almost or derivative? Like what
honestly, I'm starting to get the impression like it's either derivative, it's either just stupid. Like
okay.
But it feels like it's leaning way too hard into it. Like,
yeah.
I think it's just this is what puzzle games are like, and it just kind of stays out of the way, but it's all there in the background. And if it was done as an intentional aesthetic choice of all of these random things are meaningful, but you don't have to pay attention to them at all. I appreciate that aesthetic design.
Yeah.
Like you can finish a puzzle and before you leave, more platforms will show up and here's the extra hard part of this puzzle. Get to this platform now. And when you get there, you get a scroll that says some random fortune cookie bullshit that doesn't mean anything.
So
it has to be intentional.
So it's like me scraping together some fucking words to go in my D&D campaign.
Pretty much.
Oh, great. Awesome. I think that's an odd fit for a puzzle game that's trying to have a story.
It doesn't have a story. It has an atmosphere.
Oh, thank you. Is that directly from the PR or?
That's what I said for the first 15 minutes of Unfinished Swan.
Huh. I actually hadn't heard of this game, so that's
yeah,
that's
cool. The YouTube threw me a random trailer. I'm like, the hell is this? Oh, that came out today.
Yeah. I wonder if it even showed up at any of the events Sony went to. Not that they went to many events this year, but...
they've been busy with...
With
shifting.
Ejecting executives from the top of various parts of the company.
I need them to not do that. I rely on sizzle reels to make buying decisions.
Yeah, I think sizzle reels are more helpful than most people think. I notice things in sizzle reels and, like, that's... Some of the coolest games at E3 have shown up in sizzle reels. For example, I'm pretty sure fucking the Tecmo's Deception game that came out at the end of the PS3 generation wasn't even announced on any stage. It just showed up in a sizzle reel.
Mm-hmm. First year we saw Gravity Rush. That was it.
Yeah.
You remember the most one of the more iconic sizzle reels of what the fuck is that? What is that? Was
yeah.
When they put Cuphead in a sizzle reel.
Yes.
And that's how people saw that game for the first time.
Yeah.
They're like, what's that? What is this?
What the fuck is this game? Why aren't you people talking about it? Yeah. Did you play anything else, Aggro?
Nope, just Solitaire on my phone.
Wow. I think Aggro is a commendable model of what we should all aspire to be. Someone who talked about the games he played in the last week in 7 minutes.
I thought I was going to be talking about Solitaire and wrestling.
No, please don't talk about wrestling. Thank you.
It's fine. I don't think me or KZ even actually keep track of it.
Good.
I think AEW is the wrestling organization being made to own the corporations.
I support them by default.
You know, they're also owned by a billionaire family, right?
No, there's no way.
Look, I take what I can get.
You know, I'm sitting here trying to log into Patreon to keep track of the important things in life, aka the Podlords, and Patreon's like, new live stream workshop, the journey to becoming a full-time creator with podcaster Drew Ackerman.
We've changed our layout 15 times.
And now we're doing pop-up ads. Oh, God. Okay. Anyway, let's keep track of the important things in life. Like the Podlords.
The hell is a Podlord?
The Podlords? Nobody's told you about the Podlords?
I haven't heard the good news about Podlords.
Let me tell you the great news about Podlords. Podlords are like people, but they're way better.
Do you want to make Aggro read these?
I don't know. I feel like I'm infringing on his rights if I make him read the names of people who are paying us. You know, cool people like Danny Richardson, NotGag, E. Lee Broyles, Third Birthday Wen, Corey Brown, Dank Mormons, Red Blaze 27, Shadow Jucifer, The True Self, Suzu Shiro, Maddie Emily Moe, Emperor Zero, Ramakiss, Crystal Pen. I'm not reading that. Casper Audio Skillbox VPN Shadow Legends. Chris Fitzpatrick.
That's just a list of YouTube sponsors.
Oh, yep. Okay.
It's pretty
good. This podcast is not brought to you by Raid Shadow Legends.
It is Kraken. You know, they didn't provide us with a character who is a lot of fun and has these mechanics. Here's gameplay footage they handed us. Shiba Yagato says, "May your heart be your guiding key." No.
Got him.
Brandon Hanabarger, Cappy, and it was either this or buy the Dreamcast version of Rattergy. What is that, a typo? One second, I'm looking this up.
do they mean a rat-like energy?
No, this is a game. I've never heard of this game. What the fuck is this game? Huh. Thank you very much to our podlords, except for the one whose name I literally wasn't going to read.
Oh, I thought that was his name.
Nope. There is a line. They crossed it.
Can you at least imply what it's about?
No, that gratifies them too much.
You're right. Sorry.
I'm just going to post it.
And read it. That isn't that bad.
Feel,
Agro,
go right.
You read it.
Feel, go right
I'll
ahead.
I'll read it if Dan won't.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you. It's Cocktober, so you know what that means.
Taking your girl pumpkin picking, and you're going to pump her with something real nice.
Oh, I didn't even know there was
classic
more.
Classic podcast.
Oh, no, I have the classic whole copy pasta because Sophie sent me that at 5 a.m.
Of
I woke
course
up. I woke up to that shit. I sometimes repeat what people send me, like, the last part of it first. So I just wake up groggy, like, what is this text? It's gonna fuck you real good with his scythe on Horloween.
I think we could have kept just to me reading the name and needing no elaboration.
It's almost like I didn't read it because it led to that. Anyway, let's talk about the news!
Beep, 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 beep.
Time for some legally distinct news!
You know what's legally distinct?
Oh, please do not start with Feel's top bullet point. KZ, talk about any of your news.
Oh, okay. I was going to start with assaulting a man.
Okay. Fuck it, assault the man right now.
Go right ahead.
Randy fucking Pitchford, you insufferable little goblin man. I want you out of our fucking show notes.
Oh, that would be great.
So, simply, I saw there was some news where it was like, Troy Baker at a fan event, because he, in case you didn't know, Troy Baker and Nolan North do Let's Plays now, and they just do that at a fan meetup. Someone asked him about Borderlands 3, which his explanation was, Gearbox refused to go union, so I couldn't do it. And then Gearbox made like, before Gearbox had even made a response statement, I just typed, "Feel beat up on Pitchford, please," in his show notes. And then,
oh, you didn't even know about the other thing.
I had not known about the other thing until a little bit later, and then I posted like a tweet about it of the response Kotaku made. And then you wrote some nice words right there in our notes.
I will read these verbatim. Randy fucking dipshit idiot fucking Pitchford insinuated his shitty fuck company made Troy fucking Baker in 2014 after he had been both Joel and the villain of Far Cry 4 with his shitty fucking Telltale licensed game that nobody even fucking played, which is part of why Telltale fucking went under, this slimy magician fuck.
Yeah, Agro, do you know anything of what happened with this news? Like, did you read the PR thing from fucking Gearbox?
Which PR thing? They seem to put out a shitty PR statement about every 20 seconds.
I know. They do that. They really do. But this time they were like, oh, we're going to explain the whole situation with the Troy Baker thing. And they just slipped in a fucking line where they're like, we helped launch his career.
Good, like, sweet Christ. This man is pathological.
Yeah.
The statement, "Troy is an exceptional talent. We're disappointed that he declined to partner on Borderlands 3 after being offered the part. We wish him the best in hopes he knows the offer to collaborate still stands. We're a Texas company bound by Texas law, which means a person can't be denied employment because of a membership or non-membership in a labor union or such. We are a talent-owned and talent-led organization.
No, you're not.
We enthusiastically work to ensure our pay and working conditions meet or exceed union standards. We also believe strongly in hiring local voice actors whenever we can, which is why we're thrilled Troy's career took off after working with us.
Fuck me.
Now, I had to figure out why. Why they would ever think it was Borderlands. He worked on a game with them before Borderlands. And that's what they're trying to source here. He was in Brothers in Arms in 2005.
Ground into mulch.
You know what came out before that?
Grinder.
You know what came out before that and is infinitely more impactful and important in the
Blood
world?
Blood Rain 2?
No. Aggro, do you know?
Case closed.
Case fucking closed. The best anime ever goddamn made by man.
He was also a major character in the original Fullmetal Alchemist.
Yeah, I guess Full Metal's important, but let me tell you about Jin from Case Closed. Jin's a cool fucking guy.
That wasn't the only Pitchford thing, by the way. Apparently, KZ missed one.
Oh, yeah?
I try not to look at him.
So, the composer, Bobby Prince of Duke Nukem 3D, is suing Gearbox and Randy Pitchford. Because they bought the rights to certain Duke Nukem games from Apogee in 2010. Prince said, yeah, the contract for the music was only for Apogee, and my contract says I still own all that shit. And Gearbox just put it in without ever contacting me.
Oh.
And then he said he contacted Pitchford personally and was like, hey, give me some royalties for that shit you used. And Pitchford said, I'll take care of it. Pitchford lied because he's a pathological liar.
Mm-hmm.
So then they didn't take the music out. They didn't pay him. Prince contacted Valve and was like, hey, Valve, take down their game. I own this and they're not doing it. And Valve refused. So Valve is also being sued. Neat. Alongside Gearbox and Randy Pitchford. I would like to also point out that when Gearbox started putting out Duke Nukem stuff, they basically strong-armed the people currently making the Duke Nukem stuff out of it. Like, there was a version of the Duke Nukem 3D that was, by all standards, better than the one Gearbox put out after. And the Gearboxes exist because they went and strong-armed the people who put out the previous one.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
There's so many things you can link to Gearbox and Randy not wanting to spend money on anything ever.
Like the reason they're located in Texas where they don't have to follow union laws.
But yeah, I wanted to just point out the fact that, oh, they didn't want to go union. So they end up doing that. And I listened to enough podcasts where they go, yeah, they just, you know, sometimes that, you know, the whole Claptrap thing. He wasn't voiced by an actual voice actor. It was like someone who worked there. And the fact the main villain of Borderlands 3, because there's two villains, but the main one is the girl, Tyrene, who's the leader of the two live streaming cultists that are like Common and Obey is one of the lines of Borderlands 3. She's just someone who works there. Just someone who works there who just said, yeah, you can have the part. And she has the overwhelming amount of stuff there. And it's like, oh, no wonder you didn't go union. You're just grabbing whoever you can to voice in this game.
Yeah, because it's free.
Yeah. So I'm not surprised, given some alleged controversies about what Randy Pitchford does, the fact that they openly refuse to go union on a voice acting gig, they hire people within the company.
Mm-hmm.
So many games aren't union.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about the fact that there are so many things that can be brought down to, they don't want to pay the money for that.
Yeah, because you can make a game that's not union, but also not voice cast an entire game in your development studio.
That's shit people did 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
It's authentic and old school.
That's like Mega Man 8 dub.
Hey, Mega Man 8 dub's really good. My name's Aquaman, but you can call me handsome.
That is one of the best voice roles in video game history, along with whatever the Iceman equivalent that. It was, I will crush you.
I will punish you.
Mm.
10 out of 10.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jump, jump, slide, slide.
Yeah. You know, I'm seeing this news and I really want to talk about it now. Bungie is apparently trying to get a non-Destiny game out by 2025?
What is Yeah. That they put out a statement where they're like, yo, we're launching, because they just launched the Shadowkeep, I think it's called, the next big Destiny 2 thing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, things are going well. We're going to, because they were supposed to be making some completely new IP after they got like a bunch of money from, I think it was like a Chinese company or something.
Yes,
and they're
correct.
Like, we're going to have big dicks and we're going to be like a super big company and we're going to get another non-Destiny thing out by 2025. So I'm like, all right, sure.
Yeah, that's I mean,
all the post Activision moves have been great that they've been doing with Destiny.
Yes. So. I'm really excited to try out Destiny 2 Shadowkeep. I'm going to try to do that sometime soon.
Yeah, I didn't play much of Forsaken, so I think I need to burn through that at some point and then jump on the new stuff.
Mhm.
You like grapes?
You know what's funny?
Yeah, what's up?
Blizzard going, Nintendo, please respond. Please text me back. Text me back, Nintendo. So, Blizzard has said, and really it's Activision, but Blizzard Activision have said, Nintendo can have any Overwatch character they want for Smash, which to me says that they really expected a call after that people speculating Tracer was in mm-hmm. over, Smash thing. And they did mm-hmm. not get that call, and now really want that call.
When Ugh. You talk about how much you would like your character you created for the company that you're in, for them to get into Smash, that means there has been no call, and there's no hope for that call.
You can smell the desperation. Like, I know it sounds high school, but it's one of those things. You don't ask them. You wait for them to ask. What are you doing? You're blowing this.
Like, it has to have been... That fake leak came out, people posted about it for a while, and Blizzard was like, clearly this put the idea in their head, and then no call. They're like, please, 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 Nintendo, we're available. Just pick up the phone.
See, I like this with the whole Minecraft Steve thing, because Microsoft was like, that's stupid, he wouldn't be a good character, because it was Banjo.
Mm-hmm.
Blizzard tries to do the same thing and they're like, guys, Overwatch wouldn't be a good match. Now Diablo.
Oh.
Now we're going to work in World of Warcraft characters. Could you imagine?
So speaking of companies that are forward thinking and can see the writing on the wall, Rocket League is ditching loot crates entirely.
Yeah, what are they replacing it with? Because they announced
they're switching
plan.
The loot crates are going to be replaced with blueprints, which you produce with premium currency, and you always just get what's on the blueprint.
Okay, so you get to go to a shop to see what blueprint you want to buy?
It's like you just random... Apparently you can buy blueprints, I think. They also just randomly drop.
Okay.
As you're playing the game. And then you use a premium currency to build the blueprint.
Hmm.
So before they had the loot crate and keys thing.
Right, which makes it random what you're spending the money on.
And in this, they're like, it's basically, this shit is going to be illegal, so we're stripping out the part that would get us hammered by that law.
Right. I mean,
I think they had something also that people, there was like a hot button microtransaction issue that a few months ago they said they were rolling back as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not surprised that they are continuing to make this game as desirable as possible.
Compliant with upcoming legislation.
Yes.
It's always good to make your hit game not come off as a scourge of humanity.
Here's a real minor thing. So, if you use Twitter, you may have seen a girl with very large thighs constantly for, like, the past 6 months.
I mean, I don't follow any accounts that would do that, but,
Yes, you do. That would be...
That's me!
The protagonist of Atelier Ryza. And for for months, I was sitting here thinking, like, will this sell the most because they made a really horny protagonist design that everybody's drawing fan art of? And the answer is yes.
I don't even know what fucking character you're talking about. What's the name of this character?
Atelier. It's the protagonist of Atelier Ryza. Her name is Rysalyn Stout.
You want me to just give you a picture?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, you just want a picture.
Because all I'm getting is box art. Oh, okay. I searched the name of the game and then hit images on Google, and I think I hit
it. Yeah, look at those thighs. Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah, I hit it.
But 150,000 week one in Japan only, which is that's like as much as they sell total in all regions, usually.
They said they had stock issues.
Like, I just think that's hysterical.
And an excuse to bring up her thighs on the podcast. Good call, Phil.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I also cover this franchise extensively, so this one was the best-selling in forever is big news.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this one will sell well enough in English that they can bring back the dub.
That would be nice.
Because they quit 2 years ago.
It's always really depressing when a game franchise is like, we're just going to stop dubbing it when we bring it over. And it's like, you know how many people you're, like, cutting out when you do that? Like,
poor Blaze Blue.
Oh, man. Blaze Blue is just like, I'm going to die over here. Are you all okay with that? And everyone said no, and they said, whatever.
Blaze Blue was less depressing to me because that wasn't even sales. That was just, we don't want to take the time to dub it. That would delay the English release.
Yeah, so they fucked over the U.S. voice cast on the final, like, conclusion of the fucking plot fucking entry in the series because they didn't want to take longer bringing it over. That's a really fucking good choice they made.
Well, I mean, I think the worry was that too many people would import it because it's just a fighting game. And then they would lose sales of the English version to the Japanese version because they region locked one of them that was even... You know, where the console didn't have region lock, they went and region locked the game specifically.
So this is how much a dub can delay a game. Continuum Shift came out 6 days later in the States. Or 26, sorry. So barely 3 weeks.
I guess they were worried, or they were stupid. Probably both.
Probably just that second one. I feel like it's more of a budget thing than it is we're worried about sales, because that's insane. Ugh.
I know that they region locked one of the previous Blaze Blues, and that was their explicit reason why you couldn't import the Japanese one. I forget which one it was, but it was one of them where they're just like, it'll cannibalize the Western. I think maybe it was a Persona one.
Yeah, I think it was the second Persona one.
Yeah, I think it was Ultimax, where they're just like, we're region locking it, so don't buy the Japanese version, you won't be able to play it. And in the Fairy Tale Minute, the director of the upcoming Fairy Tale game hopes it will be successful enough to make it an ongoing franchise.
I'm so envious of Bob.
He's dodged so much.
What are you talking about, Dan? You're right here in the epicenter. Who knows what could happen next? Somebody could talk about anime girl feet. I'm all a tingle with anticipation.
So, AEW.
God damn it.
KZ, talk about Alpha Dream.
Okay, Alpha Dream, these are the developers of the Mario and Luigi RPG series. They have filed for bankruptcy, unfortunately.
They're apparently working on one last thing, so I assume Nintendo will just buy them, assuming Mario and Luigi isn't dead.
Yeah, there were some, I heard some murmurings that they were trying to work on something for PS4 and Switch, and people are wondering if that deal just fell through, and that's why this happened.
I'm going to say something cruel.
Oh, good.
If Mario and Luigi dying means we get real Paper Mario back, okay.
That's real presumptuous of you to think that they won't just move goalposts and make another bad Paper Mario game. And
I mean, that's always been their excuse. That was the official line from Nintendo, which is like, well, we didn't want two Mario RPG series, so we decided to just ruin Paper Mario. Anyway, I wish them well.
Yeah, I don't think
I hope they
Nintendo,
make another good game.
I don't think Nintendo's going to buy them. Nintendo doesn't really buy studios. Like, all their studios are internal.
Do they even own, like, the ones like Goodfeel?
No.
Grezzo?
No. Yeah.
Isn't it like second party? Isn't that the term?
Yeah, that's the term.
I mean, they own Monolith Soft.
Do they?
Yeah, but that at least makes sense. They worked on Breath of the Wild.
Well, I mean, they bought Monolith Soft before then, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, they bought Monolith Soft in 2007.
Ah. I don't know. I hope they do, because then stuff can...
Yeah, there's a lot of affiliated stuff, but they don't own very many. Like, they don't even own HAL.
Right. They don't own HAL, which is a pretty good sign that they don't buy studios if they don't own HAL by now. It's just 33 years of getting good games from those guys. Not sure
maybe,
if we
maybe
need
they'll
them.
Just, maybe they'll just suck up all of Alpha Dream's staff.
The fact that the Switch has, ever since it was about to exist, I'm like, all right, I'll buy the next Alpha Dream Mario & Luigi game that they make. And then they made them remake two old games, but murder their soundtracks and add
murder
weird
their
minigame gimmicks. And then they
make
died.
The games look weird, and then they died.
I love the idea that KZ's like, I'm gonna buy the next Alpha Dream game! And then the fucking skies parted and a cruel god laughed down at him.
I'm like,
well,
I'm like, this is the filler arc, and then they're gonna make a real new game on Switch. Oh no, they died before they can reach it!
I mean, the filler arc was their entire output on the 3DS.
They made one 3DS game. I didn't like it that much, but at least it was
a
new... They made Mario & Luigi Dream Team, they made Mario & Luigi Paper Jam, and then they remade Superstar Saga and Bowser's Inside Story.
For some reason, I thought there was a sixth Mario & Luigi game I forgot, but I guess not. But they made two, and they were both bad.
They took the worst aspects of Paper Mario when they brought it over and fused it with Mario & Luigi. They just went, all right, it's not really as much of an RPG or anything.
You know, we had that part earlier where we were talking about Arxis, and that was a pretty good transition into this news, but we didn't take it. So now we're going to have to do a really clunky transition.
Guilty Gear trailer, it's 50 seconds long, but hey, it looked good.
Yeah, it has
Yeah, it looks good.
That shit's hype.
I'm really curious on how this is... There seems to be, like, a weird big... There's, like, a huge focus on juggling while standing on the ground in this game, because that's featured prominently in every trailer.
Hmm.
And I'm just wondering how that feels, because they said, when they did that interview, they were like, we want to cut down on things that look difficult. Which, I would imagine this is them being like, okay, now you don't have to get into the air to keep hitting people, you can do it from the ground.
Maybe.
It's all on Square.
I just saw dolphin combos and went, that looks cool.
It's just gonna be Square button auto like, combos.
The two trailer honestly looked like Tekken-esque in just like keeping people in the air from the ground.
Mm.
Yeah, that reminded me of Tekken a lot of just, oh man, they just keep going.
I only really play Tekken, so it didn't look weird to me.
No, this is normal.
I saw dolphin combos, and I saw everyone celebrate that new arrival Axel has lost his jean shorts. No longer feel kin.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you can tell Axel got announced because there was no fan art.
Oh, that's fucking... Come on.
God! There was a little, but not as much.
Axel Lowe's cool, damn it. He's not May tier, but come on, who is?
I hope they show Anji next, because they totally dumped him the whole Exard.
Oh, yeah? Angie Vito isn't in Exard?
Not in any of them.
Wow. I guess...
In fact, people got mad, because, like, the butterfly came out of the portal, and people were like, oh, it's Anji. No. It's Axel.
But it looks like they may just be doing a new trailer every 2 weeks until they reveal the full...
Yeah,
like how the game works, but maybe because we got another one in 2 weeks that'll be likely doing the same thing, because every Arc System Works trailer basically follows the exact same template.
It's so weak. If it was any other company, people would be up in arms. I think people need to be a little bit more
tolerate it. I'm willing to tolerate it because they're doing one every 2 weeks. But if it's, like, 4 months since the last character reveal...
Yeah, if it's, like, Fighters, where it's, like, here's 50 seconds of Gogeta, and 30 of them are his cinematic super.
I'm like, I've gotten nothing out of this. I get it. You make shit that looks good. I know that going in.
Yeah.
But it looks cool.
Yeah, no, the trailers look really nice. The animation quality is so much drastically better than Excerpt. It's fucking stunning. But yeah, I'm excited
she
for the
so
actual
much older,
trailer.
Because I
when
saw
it landed.
Footage of her from Exard.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird because she's been, even in Exard, she's like 19. And now she just got a growth spurt. It's strange.
Late bloomer. Let's talk about something we actually got a question about on the mailbag that ended up being news this week. Crossplay beta ended, and it's now a full feature for developers. Thank God.
It is.
And coupled with this news that coming out of them being like, oh yeah, that's just a thing on PS4 now. Developers could do that. We're very happy. They also said, also, we're aware that the people who are in first place one gen get the shit knocked out of them next gen, so we're going to try to earn your money.
That was the most hilarious fucking thing, Jim Ryan going, yeah, we're aware of that whole thing where every other year someone gets owned, and we really don't want that to happen at all.
Oh my God, it's like they watch E3 or something.
Oh my God, it's like they listen to Big Think Dimension.
Everyone's like, why?
I mean, this makes me more hopeful, but it's easy to say that and harder to act on it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To be fair, yes, but who knows? Maybe they have some really great features planned.
This at least means they're not like some fucking king on a throne with a pedestal being like, the peasants want crossplay. Let them eat cake, and then they get drug off and put in the fucking guillotine.
Right, that's what I expected going into this next gen. At least we aren't quite let them eat cake tier. That's good.
At first was a little concerned, because this came shortly after the other news that we got, but then when I heard some people talk about certain aspects of it, I'm like, you know, maybe this was okay. So, probably the biggest piece of news this week was... PlayStation just making a tweet saying, yo, Sean Layden left. That's it.
Yeah,
Twitter. No press release.
That sounds like it was not amicable.
And immediately some insiders or like journalists said, yeah, there sounds like there were some
power struggle.
Bad blood or power struggle between him and Jim Ryan, apparently.
Yeah.
And then other statements like, yeah, you know the reason that they stopped doing press conferences is that Sean Layden really hated the idea that they were spending so much money when they could just show trailers whenever they wanted. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe he can just never come back. maybe this dude can just never fucking come back.
I mean, that's how I feel about that, because Jesus Christ, guys, you need to try to convince us to buy your games. You don't just get to drop a trailer on YouTube, assume we're going to be there to watch it, and assume we're going to give a shit. You need to be showing your games in fucking sizzle reels and conferences and shit. You need to fucking try. You don't deserve our attention. You have to earn it.
Because, like, if...
Fucking shit.
Because I saw a couple of different people saying that, you know, he was one of the main movers who's saying, hey, we shouldn't be spending so much money on press conferences. I don't see the point in that kind of thing. And I'm like, no, that's...
We shouldn't have to try. We're the kings.
Well, I mean, maybe they shouldn't be spending so much money on, like, building a church and hiring a flute master. Like, we need the middle ground where just show up and play the trailer.
Four times.
I think the theater setup from the year before was a perfectly defined thing.
And that's why you're going to hell.
The one before
the church.
Okay.
Remember the really good E3 where Sony opened up with an orchestra and then showed trailers for 90 minutes and then got off the stage?
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty good.
The happy medium was the 2018 one where it's like, all right, it's a theater, it's filled with trailers, they do weird, dumb prop shit in the background, like there were Days Gone, like freakers hanging from a wall that were real actors.
Mm-hmm.
2018 was the bad one, KZ, you mean 2017.
Yeah.
Oh, was it? Oh, shit, I got my years mixed up.
It's
Fuck.
Okay. You know,
I'm like, oh yeah, I was like, it's gotta be the one from before this, and I forgot they skipped in E3, because who would skip E3?
Right? Sean Layden.
And they skipped Gamescom, and they skipped Tokyo Game Show.
It's almost like they skipped out on the end of this generation. It's kind of weird. Sony's Tokyo got a Game bad Show habit
one
of
is
that.
By far the most baffling one to me, because it's like, guys, there are people in Japan need to know about your fucking games.
Yeah.
There's no Microsoft to pick up the slack here. You have pretty much undivided attention. No.
Nah.
We don't have to try. I don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah, they're 100% going to start doing conferences again. I'm basically convinced at this point.
Yeah, no, they have to. They're launching a new console. They have to, whether or not they want to. Aggro, you know what I'm ready for? I'm ready for a return to form. I'm ready for them to have a fictional CEO. I want the return of Kevin Butler.
Oh, yeah, no, it needs to be 2005 up in this bitch.
We need just some bizarre fake CEO to come out and present
E3. I'm so excited.
I don't know if they do the fake CEO again, because Nintendo even cut back on the RC executives are memes, because I found this out in the past year. Apparently investors really fucking hate that.
Yeah, that's idiotic. Then again, investors are fucking morons and they want Capcom to get back into the arcade business,
right?
Because they don't understand where it went.
Aggro, hasn't even Vince, like, stopped being Vince, basically?
Yeah, like, he'll come back every now and then to be like, I'm here, get the ratings up, but, yeah,
but
pretty
much. Because investors hate your CEO being a funny meme man.
Which is idiotic,
yeah,
but...
fucking investors, man.
Yeah,
how dare... Stop trying to make people have, like, a connection to your product.
Right? This is advertising how dare you? Written with lightning. This is the best.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? They turned him into Muppets. Jim Henson Muppets.
Yeah. No,
and
that
investors
the
hated that.
Right? Reggie Fils-Aime had more market power than, like, most Fortune 500 companies by himself.
Yes. I legitimately agree with that statement.
Vince's gorilla walk is more valuable than, like, most advertising campaigns ever concocted.
And now we get to talk about the news where Dan was going to grandstand with a prediction and be proven true, but unfortunately Nintendo came and outed themselves right before we went to record this! I'm not happy.
They outed it even more than you thought.
Alright. So, Game Informer isn't doing too well, but they at least apparently got the cover, the coverage of this done, I guess like a month or two ago, I imagine. They got a big Pokemon Sword and Shield info. I'll roll through it real quick. Let me get the minor things out, because that's not as big.
Yes.
Number one, the game will feature new mechanics to allow people to make their Pokemon competitively viable. A lot
Phrasing
of the wording and how they described it sounds like you can change your natures, potentially, within the game.
Yeah.
Because they said... People who catch Pokemon when they play through the game find that they have to throw that shit away and then make something competitively viable that's good. And we don't want them to do that anymore. We want them to be able to have options so your starter you really liked or that bird you picked up on Route 1 is good.
Really bizarre, personally, because I think trying to make that tier of competitive play... something you could do with just a Pokemon you found really bizarre. Like, I don't think people need to take that Pidgey from Route 1 and it be their fucking competitive Pidgey. I think farming
Maybe they
for...
just, like, they want to be able to try it and stuff, because they said, like, online's going to have, like, you can rank up and it's going to have seasons, so you can, like, go through a ladder against people.
It also just feels like a quality of life improvement. Like... You can catch a Pokemon and then fucking specifically train it into whatever Eevee or Ivy or whatever the acronym is.
It's Eevee.
Eevee you want. Like, you can do that. That is possible. Any player of any skill level can do that. It just takes an ass amount of time to do.
Well, actually, they made that a lot easier, too. So this would just be another step in that, where you can now change the nature. And to some extent, they kind of maybe implied even the Ivy value, like the Ivies. Would be something you might be able to affect. Which, yeah, I do think that's really weird, because I don't think, like, as a person who finds competitive fascinating, I don't think removing the amount of time to breed a competitive Pokemon is a net positive or even relevant to most casuals. Like, I don't think most casuals give a shit about whether the nature is competitive.
Right, so it would just make it easier
for competitive
players to get what they
want. I feel like if they start moving in a direction of like post-game allows you to, like, queue up into the into like online battles with laddering and stuff like that. I feel like this is a step to get people to understand how to do this stuff and easily get into it.
Yeah, you're making high-end competitive content more approachable to people who don't want to half sleep on a couch for an entire week making an Infernape fuck a ditto until it learns Thunder Punch.
Yeah, that was a good week. That's a good Infernape.
Felt really good when you got it.
Yeah, the egg moves are fucking dope.
And now it gets to stay in Pokemon Home.
Yeah, isn't that great? He now gets to go to a retirement home instead of the Galar region.
Yeah, locked away where that monster belongs.
You're a monster.
I agree. Hashtag Dexit.
Look, all I'm saying, Dr. Agro, is not everything needs to be easy like shake and bake. Some things being difficult gives them value.
Speaking of value and a thing that had no value, HMs, they're still dead.
Good.
Oh, that's the good.
No, 100%
back
with
is
that.
A sociopath.
I'm fucking 100% for this, just so we're clear.
Like, I'm that guy who bitches every time a WoW thing happens, but fuck them.
Yeah,
fuck Sun HM. And Moon didn't have them.
Yeah, this is just reiterating that, because they said the big, like, giant bird, like the black bird Pokemon, is like a taxi system for all the cities. So I was like, yeah, they're just gonna do ride Pokemon again, where if there's exploration stuff, there'll be a special Pokemon to use for that. Auto-saving is also a thing. It's an option.
Yeah, it's just
so.
That's just a modern game feature now. Right. It would be weird if it didn't have that.
I know Xeon's gonna dance in the streets.
I had a couple people who aren't into Pokemon freak the fuck out this week going, what do you mean auto saving's a new feature to Pokemon? What has happened to you people?
To some extent, you wouldn't want it to auto save, so I was really glad that they said you could disable it. Like,
you want to start the game with maybe like good stats or natures, or I'm fucked up trying to catch a legendary.
Right,
I'm most imagining. Right. Like, it's like they're not going to go, no, you get one chance to catch each legendary.
So what the Pokemon company is saying is they engaged auto-saving, so that way 98% of the game, you're going to be like, oh, man, this is great. Then you're going to hit that legendary you killed, but you had auto-saving on it, you're going to go, fuck!
unless it's a good auto-save and only auto-saves specific points, instead of having a Dark Souls-esque auto-save where it's like, you killed that NPC, auto-save.
It'd be ideal if it was a real game where it's like, all right, you have an autosave save and you have a hard save save.
And you have, that would make the most sense, but Nintendo...
But that means it can't be.
You kill the fucking legendary and it's like Arceus will remember this.
Right? It's the only time you see the saving icon on the screen. You fucked up, Jimbo.
I don't understand Nintendo's neuroticism with saves in their games. Where it's like, no Pokemon can have multiple save slots ever. No, you can't back it up on cloud save.
Well, your other save slot is going to be buying another version.
Honestly, with newer Pokemon games and knowing how bad that company is about compression technology, I think they can only fit one save file.
They're struggling to meet that save file.
Yeah.
Also, no cloud saves, because, you know, we don't want nobody cheating.
Yeah, I think every single game you would want cloud saves on the Switch is disabled. I think every single one. Because Smash is disabled, Splatoon 2 is disabled, and this is disabled.
Splatoon 1's really hilarious because of the big single-player campaign that exists in it.
Well, I mean, if they allowed cloud saves, it would mess with the competitive leaderboard.
Yeah, God forbid the thing that everybody else has on all of their games and doesn't cause a problem is fucking the beyond the pale for Nintendo. Because whatever 150-year-old decaying mummy is in the depths of that company that they have to convince to allow them to do any online functionality at all.
Yeah.
I like Mario.
Something that I don't see in KZ's notes, so I'm going to bring it up. They explicitly, Omori specifically said that the reason, like, they aren't going to allow all the Pokemon in is so that way they... Because with each game, it was hard to get new features they wanted to work in at the same time as supporting the entire Pokedex. So
yeah,
they explicitly said they're not allowing all the Pokemon in, so that way they can focus on more gameplay features that they want to get in, and they should be able to actually get into the game this time instead of canceling like they did with all the other ones. So, you know, that's a pretty valid reason. I appreciate them having a valid reason for this instead of going, it's the animations. Because at the end of the day, some people may be like, yeah, Dynamaxing's cool. Doing these raid battles is neat. The Curry system, the Currypedia or whatever they're calling it, the Curry deck.
Yeah.
That's neat. These are all neat things that might form an opportunity cost that's worth it.
Whereas, yeah, like the job system is also in where you just send them out to work on shit.
Yeah.
That Masuda thing that what he did, like, he could not, that National Dex is never coming back unless their sales just tank.
Yep, because that's probably the case, yeah.
We're now at like quadrupling down, not even maybe in the future. It's never coming back. It won't be in the next one either. You put your Pokemon in home, and that's where they live now.
He did make a comment where he's like, you know, there's a really good chance that a Pokemon that doesn't come to this region will want to vacation in other regions. He says that in Game Informer thing, yeah.
But not all of them, though. Never all of them ever again.
The other thing in that bullet point was the experience share is gone because everything gains experience now.
Experience share is dead. That's how it was. Long live experience share.
Yes.
Sun and Moon was balanced around it anyway.
Well, I saw a bunch of people going, this is a bad idea. They won't balance it around this. And I went, what do you mean they won't balance around it? It's the only way you play the game.
Sun and Moon was balanced around it explicitly.
I like the notion that it's experience share versus experience all versus we just made the game work, you guys. It's we don't need a name for it this time. The experience goes to everyone in your party like a sane video game.
They're like, we're not gonna make it so that our game has to be balanced both for people that use the experience share and the people who are like, I need to play like I did before.
Well, they just didn't do that for Sun and Moon.
Yeah.
Well, in some of the games, when you disabled the experience share or experience all, you would get more experience to that one Pokemon. Does anyone know if Sun and Moon did that? Did anyone experience turning it off?
No, I don't think it did because you get it early, but not immediately.
Okay.
And I didn't notice any difference in how much experience. In X and Y and Aorus, the remakes of Ruby and Sapphire, it was not balanced for that at all, so your Pokemon would end up like 10 to 15 levels higher by end game just because you were getting like 350% experience because mm-hmm. your main Pokemon got 100% and everything else got 50.
Mm-hmm.
I played both Sun and Moon and Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, and in both cases, I didn't always have the most balanced team for everything, and there were plenty of times I got blown up. Despite using the experience share. That's ignoring that Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon before the Pokemon League has their super flagship Pokemon boss. And they just made it a super Chad that can one-shot almost anything you throw at it.
Oh, I also want to mention one more thing from like the video interview that Masuda and the other guy did.
What about AZ?
Yes. Where they just fucking flat out asked, what's the deal with AZ, the giant immortal guy from X and Y? Their response,
Their response, what is with that guy?
Seemed like a good idea at the time, I guess.
I clipped in and went, Dan will appreciate this.
He did that because it is well known that I fucking hate the story of that game, and he is one of my sore spots because he's the fourth idiotic fucking cog in that story.
You hate X and Y. I'm pretty sure most people dislike X and Y.
Yeah, but when most people dislike X and Y, it's fucking toothless. When I dislike X and Y, I tear that thing asunder. Fuck that game.
I like X and Y.
X and Y is a fucking dumb game. The first forest is basically Viridian Forest. They're like, hey, goo goo gaga, first gen, ooh woo.
This kid dances.
God, I hate that motherfucker so much.
It's so fucking... It's so bad. That video that you got that from, which is, it's like the rapid fire question video that Game Informer does every time they get coverage.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of those. Like, I've seen the Mortal Kombat one with Ed Boon. I've seen the one for Spider-Man. This was the worst one they've ever done because they got, like, no answers. Half of it is no comment. I can't say anything about that. Like, them having joke questions is normal. They got, like, nothing out of that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
They're like, are you going to show the final evolutions before release? No comment. Are you going to... National Dex related stuff, no comment.
is this like the magazine exclusive version of here's our Cranky Kong trailer, bye?
It felt less awkward. Alright, well, we have one more piece of Pokemon news, but hold on. Let me do one thing real quick. Hey Bob.
Oh hey guys, what's up?
Not much, just another episode of Big Thing.
Weird.
Stunning, yeah. Aggro, I mean, impersonation,
the way
by the
acted,
way.
You'd think you weren't here the entire time.
Well, no, we heard him earlier with his whole southern drawl. It was really good.
I don't remember any of this. This is strange.
Amazing aggro impression.
Yeah, no, stop.
You had to have been here. We talked about Code Vein for 45 minutes.
Oh, that... Just but, thinking about earlier hurts.
And Borderlands.
It wasn't even 15 minutes.
Ugh.
It felt like it.
It was 3 years.
The last thing we have here for the Pokemon Sword and Shield news, I'll read verbatim. Mm-hmm. There will be 18 gyms in the game, split into major and minor leagues, parentheses. Apparently, this was an error, and Game Freak has clarified there will be a similar number of gyms to previous games, and the 18 number meant in the lore.
So here's what happened.
In-universe numbers are fine.
They announced in Game Informer that there would be 18 gyms, somehow not realizing what the fuck that sounds like.
Sounds like you made a big full game.
It sounds like they're making the most ambitious Pokemon yet. No, it's dead. What's happening is in each game, different gyms from the set of 18 will be major gyms and other ones will be minor gyms, which will not have made it to the big leagues, as they say. So in Sword, you will have this set of 8 or whatever. And in Shield, you will have this set of 8 or whatever. And maybe 2 minor gyms at the end as post-game content or something. It is a normal size fucking Pokemon game. It is not the insane thing they made it sound like a Game Informer. So when the Game Informer news came out, I had to brace Zeon and other people who were like, holy shit, yeah, 18 gyms. No.
And even
no
I was like, oh, this is pretty exciting. Maybe it's like a post-game thing, or maybe they're like mid, like you do a minor, there are a bunch of minor gyms you do as the story goes on, and they're just like, whatever, it's a house with a dude in it.
But no, even that's too much.
Yeah, no, even that was too much.
I don't expect there to be anywhere near 18, even counting all the series, the version exclusive ones. I really think it's going to be like you get maybe 12 at most, and the rest will be in Ultra Sword and Shield next year.
I mean, they're sitting there saying it's a similar number of gyms to previous games, so it's going to be somewhere between 8 and 10.
It's going to be 8 to 8. One of those two numbers.
Yeah, one of those two.
I don't think there's going to be like 4 version exclusive gyms. I think there might be 2.
Yeah, I think there'll be 2. We'll get like 1 more exclusive for each version. And then you get to see the league switch when the second Sword and Shield game comes out the following year. Like a bunch of new gym leaders, because now these are the ones that made into the major leagues this time.
So what it's going to be, here's my bet. 4 will be consistent across both versions.
All right.
Half of them, let me put it that way. So that way, if it's 10, it's 5 of them. Half of them will be consistent across both. Half of them will be different. And then next year, we will have a different set that are consistent across both and a different unique set. Because between 18 different types, you should be able to line that up. You should be able to roughly
just
line up.
Just give us a dark one. There has not been a dark gym in any game.
First gym in the game, Dragon Gym. Do it. Do it, you fucking cowards.
That's weird. I thought
what
there was a dark gym.
What starter did you pick? Fuck you! I'm a Dragon Gym!
Well, you could they'll finally give us fairy starters or some other weird starters.
Could you imagine?
That would be
nope,
incredible.
Daisy's right. There has not been a dark... There has not been a primarily dark gym yet.
Dark has shown up as Elite Four members of...
Okay, that's probably what I was thinking of.
Yeah, kind of like the bug Elite Four guy.
It's like, hey guys.
What if some of the gyms are just, oh yeah, this Elite Four member is from this gym. So yeah, he's one of the 18.
Nah, it's okay. There's no Elite Four in Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Yeah, they're doing like
it's a tournament.
Put some big like old parentheses on that, or quotates on that rather. There's no way.
This is
the Elite Four.
Mm-hmm.
Sun and Moon had this thing where after you became champion, you could battle random challengers who were, you know, characters from in the game with like updated teams.
Yeah, they said that they're not doing an Elite Four challenge for this because it's all about like, it's a sporting event. And now that you have multiple rivals in this game, like three of them, wouldn't be surprised if they're just like, whatever, it's a tournament. Because Sun and Moon as Phil said, had title defense where you would beat the Elite Four, and then a different person would walk in and say, I want to challenge you. And there was at least six or seven of those.
That's neat.
It's going to be four matches, but it might be random who you play.
Yeah, it's like, of course, it'll still have the format of Elite Four, but it's not going to be the Elite Four.
But that's neat. It's neat, you know? It's neat until...
That's so different.
It's okay. It's okay. It's all right, I guess, this tournament structure, until Red's the final guy. Then it's fucking awesome.
What do you fucking mean, Red's here too? Get out! I mean, Red's hot now, so that's cool.
Goddamn it, Fear! Stop it. No.
What? No.
Did anyone else actually read this whole Game Informer article? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm curious if anyone else read the whole thing.
Okay, so I read big chunks. There's a lot of, they kept putting up a lot of stuff.
So yeah, Bob and I went through and read it.
I
explained that thing to them, Bob, about the, like, we don't want to do the whole Pokedex, so we can have new gameplay ideas and have the time to put it in the game.
Yeah, and then they did zero of that.
What are you talking about, Bob? There's the Curry Deck.
There's
the Dynamax. There's raiding.
Dynamax is very different from other things they've done before. You're right.
Bob, listen.
Somehow less ambitious than the last.
Bob, I'm going to Bob, I don't understand what's with this random personality switch from how you were when we were talking about this.
Yeah, we had a much more reasonable personality over here before. Now he's just.
But Bob.
Just a little jaded. I bet you don't even like Banjo-Kazooie
anymore. Maybe you're not getting the appeal of Dynamax. What if Jigglypuff and Hear Me Out got really big?
Huh. That'd be pretty interesting. It'd be like Smash Bros. I've never seen Smash Bros. Before.
Did you know that Dynamaxing isn't real?
What?
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 They don't actually get big. They create astral projections of themselves, and they're inside them.
I forgot about that.
Oh, so they're their stands. Okay.
Yeah, they're stands. Yes.
And then in the rapid fire questions, like, where are they? It's like they're kind of inside them. Are they floating? I don't know. It's like, thank you, Matsuda.
Look, if we don't say they're floating or something, then they'll wonder why there isn't another Arcanine under that big Arcanine.
The stunning new feature for Pokemon Sword and Shield, Pokemon floats.
Yeah.
We'll say they're astral projections, then people are like, oh man, no, now they can't crush me.
Okay, so we've had our Pokemon talk. We all got our opinions out, I feel. I feel Bob just slammed every new gameplay idea into the ground, which is fine. That's your right. You get to not give a shit about Curry, but give a shit about the Pokemon in Pokemon. That makes sense.
Curry is cool.
Hashtag Dexit.
I feel like Curry might be there instead of something like the talent shows.
Oh, okay.
I'm okay with that,
I thought you were going to be like, I think Curry's there instead of, I don't know, Totodile. And I'm like, then you're literally correct.
Hey, I'm going to say this right now. Totodile sucks.
We're just, know what?
Casey's right.
I can't wait till somebody, fuck you. I can't wait till somebody fucking data mines this game and we get a
Chikorita
we
Raw.
We get an exhaustive, I like both of them, you motherfucker. It's called having a heart. Anyways, we get an exhaustive list of every Pokemon that isn't in this game, and I get to go down that list with random people and be like, okay, I need you to rank this Pokemon versus Curry.
Guys, you know what's going to happen when they data mine this game?
What's going to
happen? I'm going to show this out here right now.
Okay.
Every single Pokemon's going to be in the data for this game and have models.
Bob's probably
no
right.
No way.
Bob's probably right. They are that level of fucking hacks when it comes to programming.
Bob, you've had a lot of cynical and bitter takes on this podcast for the past 10 minutes your personality switched, this is going to be absolutely fucking right. You have hit the nail on the head.
I'll have to turn off the internet for like 3 days if that becomes true, because I won't be able to handle how mad people will be.
Yeah, no, people will be very upset.
I will laugh.
This
like,
is the best
at
part.
At that point, just shut down Game Freak. If Game Freak is that incompetent, like our past 4 games have been data mined. We told people we couldn't make assets for these Pokemon. We don't know how to not put them on the cartridge.
Yeah, that seems so likely.
Figured out which Pokemon are going to be in 6 months before launch and just ticked boxes.
And this is my favorite part of this arc. This is why this will be the incredible denouement to this thing, right, Bob?
Denouement.
Yes, it'll be denouement to Big this Newtons. Entire arc. Because when this entire time everyone was like, Game Freak, you can put in all the Pokemon, stop saying you can't. And then all the people on the internet are like, you're being toxic. Why do you keep saying that? You need to understand game development is hard. And then this shit comes out that they're all on the cartridge.
But they couldn't write the text blurbs. That's the real problem.
They don't have animations. They haven't finished the animations on
this
yet.
No one at no point is going to go, okay, you're right, Game Freak fucked up and they're really bad at this. They're all going to go, now you're just being really toxic because you hacked their game. I'm really looking forward to Pokemon coming out in November, Power to the Players.
Please look forward to when we talk about Pokemon. Eventually, it's going to be every week.
Presumably, we're doing that 5-hour-long spoiler cast, so, you know.
Oh, my God. Man, you know, back during the 16-hour window when I thought this would be a extremely feature-heavy game with a lot of content, I was like, man, this game's going to be super long. And then it's like, oh, no, we just told you something. We just told a lie.
Well, they tell you enough for your brain to go wild, so that way you don't sit there and grouse about the $60 price, and you feel like this is finally the first... Because this is the thing they're leaning into a lot. This is the first Pokemon mainline series on a console. We're not going to talk about the GameCube.
Yeah. Like, that article all has a weird tone of that. And it's like, you're mm-hmm. sounding like this is really important, but you're not telling me anything that's in this that makes it feel like that.
It's really important.
This was our most important title Game Freak has ever made. That's why we had half the team off making another game.
Hey man, in the credits are going to have 1,000 people in it.
That's not actually true.
The credits are going to have 1,000 people in it. They actually say that in the Game Informer article.
Yeah.
That's pathetic. The fact that has to be a bullet point is sad.
Localization.
That's because, you know.
Yeah, localization to like 12 different languages.
Yeah.
Because localization and testing and
Yeah. But
and marketing.
Well,
but you know what? We're going to talk about Pokemon until we fucking die. So let's end this news segment now. So, KZ, what are you doing over the next week?
I'm going to be still working on some video stuff because I think by the time this comes out, videos will be back. So just be working more on that. Maybe trying to get a second project off the ground, but nothing too crazy. But I know someone who's more busy has more stuff going on. Mr. Feel.
I'll be unlocking characters in Dragon Ball Z Burst Limit for the PlayStation 3. Because apparently I ordered that game and forgot. So what? I got a package and like, I don't remember ordering a game. What is this? And I ripped the package open and it's Burst Limit.
I win.
Okay, that's completely insane. Oh, man, that means we're going to fucking actually play it. I mean, I was planning on playing it, but I really didn't want to do, like, versus matches against these two. So, I don't intend to be playing Burst Limit in the next week, but it is Tony Hawktober, so we're going to be streaming some Tony Hawk games. We're going to be getting into the good stuff. Hopefully, we'll get to Underground sometime soon. I do not intend to play the PS1 version of 4, because, oh my god, that thing is terrible. Bob, Feel said he played that.
Oh, yeah, that sounds right. I mean, why not? I played the PS1 version of 3.
Yeah, the PS1 version of 3 is like some fucked up nightmare, but 4 is so much fucking worse. Anyway, we're going to be doing a lot of Tony Hawk stuff. We're doing more retro roulettes, I think. And sometime soon, our Dreamcast should be getting back with its HDMI mod, so that way we can do another retro roulette of the Dreamcast. which I'm really looking forward to. Also, I just remembered the part where not only does the laptop do ray tracing, but I got a free copy of this year's Call of Duty. So I guess I'm going to be playing that next month.
That's later this month.
I guess I'm going to be playing that later this month. Hey, Bob, it was a really weird part of the podcast when you said in the last week you've been playing some obscure puzzle game that no one's ever heard of.
That sounds weird. Why would I say that?
I don't know.
I think I have brain damage.
You also mentioned wrestling.
Yeah, you also mentioned wrestling. I felt that was a real betrayal there, Bob.
I feel like I don't remember the last couple hours, so that might not have been me.
Bob, wait a second. Are you why the bottle of peanut butter whiskey is so low? Bob, you have a problem. You need to stop.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Big Think Dimension. This show, like our other podcasts, is only possible with the generous time our co-hosts have given to us and the equipment we've bought to make it higher quality and easier to produce. Please consider supporting our podcast series on our Gigaboots Podcast Patreon and look forward to more Gamer Premonitions and Big Think Dimension in the future.